The message this morning comes from Luke chapter 23, verses 1 through 25. The Gospel of Luke chapter 23, verses 1 through 25. And this is what it says. Then the whole company of them arose and brought him before Pilate, and they began to accuse him, saying, "We found this man misleading our nation and forbidding us to give tribute to Caesar and saying that he himself is Christ, a king." And Pilate asked him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" And he answered him, "You have said so." Then Pilate said to the chief priests and the crowds, "I find no guilt in this man." But they were urgent, saying, "He stirs up the people, teaching throughout all Judea, from Galilee even to this place." When Pilate heard this, he asked whether the man was a Galilean. And when he learned that he belonged to Herod's jurisdiction, he sent him over to Herod, who was himself in Jerusalem at that time. When Herod saw Jesus, he was very glad, for he had long desired to see him, because he had heard about him, and he was hoping to see some sign done by him. So he questioned him at some length, but he made no answer. The chief priests and the scribes stood by vehemently accusing him, and Herod with his soldiers treated him with contempt and mocked him. Then, arraying him in splendid clothing, he sent him back to Pilate. And Herod and Pilate became friends with each other that very day, for before this they had been at enmity with each other. Pilate then called together the chief priests and the rulers and the people and said to them, "You brought me this man as one who was misleading the people. And after examining him before you, behold, I did not find this man guilty of any of your charges against him. Neither did Herod, for he sent him back to us. Look, nothing deserving death has been done by him. I will therefore punish and release him." But they all cried out together, "Away with this man, and release to us Barabbas, a man who had been thrown into prison for an insurrection started in the city and for murder." Pilate addressed them once more, desiring to release Jesus, but they kept shouting, "Crucify him! Crucify him!" A third time he said to them, "Why? What evil has he done? I have found in him no guilt deserving death. I will therefore punish and release him." But they were urgent, demanding with loud cries that he should be crucified, and their voices prevailed. So Pilate decided that their demand should be granted. He released the man who had been thrown into prison for insurrection and murder, for whom they asked, but he delivered Jesus over to their will. This is the word of God. The grass withers, the flower fades. The word of God stands and abides forever. May He bless the reading of it and the preaching of it to you this morning. We are in the Gospel of Luke, and we are looking at the events of the week leading up to the crucifixion of Jesus. After 3 years of public ministry in the land of Israel, preaching and teaching and working miracles, Jesus makes His final appearance in Jerusalem on the week of Passover in 30 A.D., It would be equivalent to this week, March 25th through March the 30th in 2018. Today is called Palm Sunday on the church calendar. It's called that because that's the day that Jesus rode into Jerusalem on a donkey, and they were spreading palm branches and waving palm branches. On Sunday, Jesus rides into Jerusalem on a donkey. He spends Sunday night just outside of Jerusalem. On Monday, He returns to Jerusalem and drives the animal sellers and the money changers out of the temple. Monday through Wednesday, He teaches at the temple and is questioned on various things by the religious authorities. Luke says, in chapter 21, verse 37 and 38, And every day he was teaching in the temple, but at night he went out and lodged on the mount called Olivet. And early in the morning all the people came to him in the temple to hear him. On Thursday, he sends two of his disciples into Jerusalem to secure a room and make preparations for the 12 disciples and Jesus to celebrate the Passover. After they celebrate the last Passover and the first Lord's Supper, they go out to the Mount of Olives. And shortly thereafter, Judas comes with a crowd from the religious authorities to arrest Jesus. He is taken into custody and off to be tried. There were actually two trials. Jesus was tried by the Jewish Sanhedrin, which was the Supreme Court in Jerusalem, and that was a religious trial. Then he was tried by Pontius Pilate, which was a civil or a political trial. We looked at the trial of Jesus by the Sanhedrin Wednesday night, and we called that religious adjudication at its worst. The religious trial was mired in deceit. It was incredibly dishonest, unrighteous, and unjust. Under Roman rule, the Jews were allowed to govern themselves within parameters set by the Roman Empire. One thing Rome would not allow the Sanhedrin to do was to execute the death penalty. The Sanhedrin was determined to have Jesus put to death, so they had to find him guilty of a crime worthy of the death penalty. They might could have gotten away with stoning Jesus to death, but that would have looked like mob violence, and they wanted this to have the appearance of legality. So they had to convince the Roman governor to enforce the death penalty. The working hours of a Roman official began at the earliest hour of the morning, just after sunrise. This is a major reason why the Jewish court conducted its own proceedings throughout the night, so they could get him before Pilate first thing in the morning. Remember what the charge against Jesus was? It was blasphemy. The Jewish council charged Jesus with blasphemy. Blasphemy is a serious offense and worthy of death in a Jewish court. But a Roman governor would not very likely execute a man on a religious charge. Something had to be done. What did they do? They did what a wicked, evil heart that didn't care anything about the truth would do. They reworded the charges to get their desired result. They changed the charge from blasphemy to insurrection against Rome. Pontius Pilate was the Roman governor of the province of Judea. There is historical evidence that Pilate was the Roman governor of Judea from about 25 AD to about 36 AD. That is why his name is in the Apostles' Creed. He is the government official before whom Jesus would have to be brought to secure a sentence of death. The Jewish leaders presented their case against Jesus before the Roman governor in a way that it would appear that he was an insurrectionist, a civil ruler who intended to oppose the Roman Empire. But that was all false. It was a lie. And Pontius Pilate is the man who will have to adjudicate this case. It is a case of jurisprudence at its worst. So what does jurisprudence at its worst look like? First of all, jurisprudence at its worst avoids tough issues rather than addressing them. Let's look for a minute at this trial. Luke 23, 1 through 3 says, "Then the whole company of them arose and brought him before Pilate. And they began to accuse him, saying, 'We found this man misleading our nation and forbidding us to give tribute to Caesar, and saying that he himself is Christ, a king.' And Pilate asked him, 'Are you the king of the Jews?' And he answered him, 'You have said so.'" It's clear what the charges are in these verses. "We found this man misleading our nation and forbidding us to give tribute to Caesar, and saying that he himself is Christ, a king. They bring these charges that Jesus is some sort of a political revolutionary. They call him a king as if he were a political rival of Rome. They know that Pilate isn't going to be in the least interested in Jewish religious disputes. They know that Pilate would want a political charge before he would hear a case. So when Pilate hears that they charge him with being an insurrectionist, a political revolutionary, he questions him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" That was the charge brought by the Sanhedrin. And Jesus answers Pilate, "You have said so." Or, "Yes, it is as you say." Jesus in this passage admits to being the king of the Jews, but it is not so clear in the Gospel of Luke as it is in the Gospel of John. We really need to turn to John chapter 18, where John has recorded for us a little bit longer description of this conversation between Jesus and Pilate. And you can read it in John 18, verses 33 through 37. There, John records for us more detail about this specific exchange between Jesus and Pilate, which helps us to understand exactly what Jesus was saying to Pilate when Pilate asked him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" John 18, 33 through 37 says this, "Pilate then went back inside the palace, summoned Jesus and asked him, 'Are you the king of the Jews?'" "Is that your own idea?" Jesus asked. "Or did others talk to you about me?" "Am I a Jew?" Pilate replied. "It was your people and your chief priests who handed you over to me. What is it that you have done?" Jesus said, "My kingdom is not of this world. If it were, my servants would fight to prevent my arrest by the Jews. But now my kingdom is from another place." "You are king then," said Pilate. Jesus answered, "You are right in saying I am a king. In fact, for this very reason I was born, and for this I came into the world, to testify to the truth. Everyone on the side of truth listens to me." Jesus basically tells Pilate two things in his response here. First of all, he tells Pilate that this phrase, "king of the Jews," is something that others are either acknowledging about him or accusing him of, that he himself is not using that title to make some sort of a political claim. In fact, he backs that up by saying, "Look, if I were aspiring to be a political ruler, wouldn't my followers be fighting for me?" He says that's proof that I am not aspiring to political rule. So Jesus makes it clear, and this is what Pilate already expected, that this charge that he's a political revolutionary is a trumped up charge in the mouths of his enemies. It's not something that can actually be accredited to his own teaching. Secondly, he explicitly says in answer to Pilate's question in verse 36 of John 18 that he is not an earthly king with political aspirations. "My kingdom is not of this world." Now, Pilate knows exactly what he means, but he goes on to say, "So you are claiming to be a king?" And Jesus' answer is basically, "Yes, but I'm the king of truth. My mission is to come into this world and bear witness to the truth." And Pilate understood Jesus. Pilate understood that Jesus was not claiming to be a social revolutionary. He was claiming to be a king in a spiritual sense, a king of a spiritual kingdom. And Pilate recognized that he was not guilty of any political designs against the Roman Empire. And Pilate realized that he was in the middle of a moral dilemma that he did not want to deal with. But we need to go back to Luke chapter 23 because Pilate heard something that would enable him to evade this tough issue. Notice Luke 23, verse 5 through 7. But they were urgent. That's the Sanhedrin saying, "He stirs up the people, teaching throughout all Judea, from Galilee even to this place." When Pilate heard this, he asked whether the man was a Galilean. And when he learned that he belonged to Herod's jurisdiction, he sent him over to Herod, who was himself in Jerusalem at that time. What did Pilate hear? He heard that Jesus had been teaching in Galilee. Galilee was a region to the north of Judea, and Herod was the ruler of Galilee. Pilate is thinking, is this man a Galilean? If he's a Galilean, that's part of Herod's jurisdiction. Maybe I can send him to Herod, and Herod will get me out of a fix by ruling on this, and I can settle down these folks that are upset in front of me. This is Pilate's way of getting himself out of this very difficult situation. It does not work. So Pilate tries something else. And we see, secondly, that jurisprudence at its worst is willing to compromise on uncompromisable issues. Notice Luke 23:13 through 22. Pilate then called together the chief priests and the rulers of the people and said to them, "You brought me this man as one who was misleading the people. And after examining him before you, behold, I did not find this man guilty of any of your charges against him. Neither did Herod, for he sent him back to us. Look, nothing deserving death has been done by him. I will therefore punish and release him." But they all cried out together, "Away with this man, and release to us Barabbas, a man who had been thrown into prison for an insurrection started in the city and for murder." Pilate addressed them once more, desiring to release Jesus, but they kept shouting, "Crucify him, crucify him," a third time. He said to them, "Why? What evil has he done? I have found in him no guilt deserving death. I will therefore punish and release him." Too often, politicians like Pilate choose the path of compromise over conviction. Pilate examined Jesus and found him innocent. Herod examined Jesus and found him innocent. That is important. That's two authoritative witnesses to Jesus' innocence. And Jesus is innocent. Pilate did not want to crucify Jesus. And the right thing to do then would have been to set Jesus free or put him in protective custody until the thing could be settled. But Pilate did not do this. Instead, he took a couple of steps to try to appease the Jews. Luke does not record everything that happened. But for time's sake, we will only look at what Luke says. Pilate says in Luke 23:15 and 16, "Look, nothing deserving death has been done by him. I will therefore punish and release him." This is how he tried to appease the Jews. He offered to punish Jesus and release him. Where is the justice in that? Punish him and release him? Pilate thought that flogging Jesus and ridiculing Jesus would be enough, but that did not satisfy the Jews. They wanted him crucified. Pilate did not have the intestinal fortitude to do the right thing. So he compromised in order to appease the crowd, and the crowd would not be appeased. During the Nazi era, Christians in Germany were faced with a devilish state and its openly anti-Christian and even anti-human practices. German citizens were commanded to have no dealings with Jews. They were not to trade with them, help them, have friendships with them, or acknowledge them in any way. Some stood up against these monsters. One who did was Martin Niemöller, who, for preaching the truth and taking a stand against the Nazis, was eventually thrown into prison. Another minister visited him in prison and argued that if he would only keep silent about certain subjects and respect the government, he would be set free. And so he concluded, "Why are you in jail?" Do you know what Niemöller's answer was to that minister? "Why are you not in jail? Why are you in jail? Why are you not in jail?" was Niemöller's answer to that. He would rather be in jail than to compromise with a wicked regime. Some issues are just uncompromisable, and you have to take your stand and suffer the consequences. There's more. Jurisprudence at its worst acquiesces to unconscionable decisions for self-preservation. Notice Luke 23, verse 22 through 25. "A third time he said to them, 'Why, what evil has he done? I have found in him no guilt deserving death. I will therefore punish and release him.' But they were urgent, demanding with loud cries that he should be crucified. And their voices prevailed. So Pilate decided that their demand should be granted. He released the man who had been thrown into prison for insurrection and murder, for whom they asked. But he delivered Jesus over to their will." In the end, Pilate was swayed by the crowd. The pressure to please the crowd is a powerful obstacle to doing what is right. Our problem is that we love the praise of men more than we love the approval of God. Many times we are put in a situation where that if we choose God, then we will have to stand alone. We will have to go against the tide. Some men have had the courage to do that in history. Some men who have stood alone at critical times in history have been men like John Wycliffe and John Huss and Martin Luther and John Calvin and Athanasius. Who was Athanasius? Athanasius was the bishop of Alexandria, who led the fight against the anti-Trinitarian Arian heresy in 325 A.D. Athanasius has an epitaph attached to his name. In Latin, it goes like this: Athanasian contra mundum. It means Athanasius against the world. When he was leading the fight in the 4th century against Arianism, and it looked like the entire Roman Empire was lapsing into Arianism, one of his colleagues exclaimed to Athanasius, "The whole world is against you." Unperturbed, Athanasius replied, "Then it is Athanasius against the world." That ought to be us. If we are followers of Christ and the whole world is against Christ, then let the whole world be against me and let me be for Christ. There's one final thing to say, and you have to go back to the Gospel of John to see this, but it is very important. Jurisprudence at its worst assumes that temporal politics are more important than transcendent spiritual realities. Politicians like Pilate fail to acknowledge where ultimately their authority comes from. Let me read to you from John 19, 9 through 11. Pilate entered his headquarters again and said to Jesus, "Where are you from?" But Jesus gave him no answer. So Pilate said to him, "You will not speak to me? Do you not know that I have authority to release you and authority to crucify you?" Jesus answered him, "You would have no authority over me at all unless it had been given you from above." Jesus said, "You could not have any power at all except it were given to you from above. Pilate, you are the governor of Judea simply because God in heaven has determined that you be that." That could be said to the President of the United States. That could be said to Putin in Russia. That could be said to any ruler of men on this earth. That could be said to all of the leaders of the world. And it could be said all the way down to the least local official. You could say that to our senators and representatives. You could say that to the governor of our state. You could say that to the mayor of our city. You do not have any authority at all except it has been given to you by that one who is above. And that one who is above is God. I would like to see people serve who really acknowledge that. Does anybody acknowledge that? Pilate is the central figure in this trial. But this is not just about Pilate. This is about us. Pilate was a compromiser. Pilate was an appeaser. Pilate's moral integrity was challenged and he failed miserably. We are actually faced with the same moral dilemma as Pilate when we have to face issues about our Christian walk and our Christian faith that affect our place in this world. All of us are susceptible to be guilty of the things that Pilate was guilty of. So I think as we read this passage, we ought to ask ourselves, do I choose the path of compromise over conviction? Do I put my position in this world, others' opinion of me, above my allegiance to Jesus Christ? Do I think that I have authority because of something I have done? Or do I recognize that what I have has been given to me from God? Do I love the praise of men more than the approval of God? That's what it all comes down to. Let's pray.